Folks, welcome back to another episode of the My Technicians Podcast. Today's guest is Shalana Ross, the Managing Director of Cyber and Strategic Risk at Deloitte. Shalana and I talk about Zero Trust, its key drivers, and the main challenges organizations are facing when adopting the security policy. According to a recent Deloitte poll, nearly 45% of executives cite complexity and compatibility with legacy systems, while 30% say the increase in cyber attacks is the greatest driver of Zero Trust adoption. Listen to the podcast to hear Shalana break down those challenges and drivers and what organizations can do to begin their Zero Trust journey. Before we get to the interview, here's a quick reminder to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google, and Spotify to hear weekly interviews with IT experts that can help you make the right decisions for your organization. And now, here's Shalana. All right, so Shalon, we are talking about Deloitte's recent poll, Is Zero Trust the Way? So a few things I found interesting about the results is that organizations cite the increase in frequency, sophistication, and impact of cyber threats as a leading driver of Zero Trust implementation. And I think that obviously makes sense. But I think that which is, the leading answer, that probably encapsulates all the other answers given, such as, managing third-party risk, managing remote work, insider threats, cloud adoption, and then what we're seeing, around Europe is where the, cyber risks and where that comes into play with geopolitical conflicts. Right. What's your take on that? What makes sense to you there?
So, I mean, look, broadly speaking, there are several underlying reasons for the adoption challenge, right? One of them is that there is the complexity of what the enterprise environment has at the moment, because cybersecurity is not a new technology. It's been around for some time. So as a result of that, at times, IT leaders say, like, I have all of this, but I do understand the need for the concepts that Zero Trust has communicated to us. But how do I get from today to tomorrow? How do I deal with, which one do I change first? Which one do I modify after that? And how do I do this without affecting my users? Because user behavioral change is one of the most complex transition processes that enterprises need to be concerned about. Everyone's used to, however easy or difficult the prior way of working was, they built muscle memory on, I click this, I do that, I enter this, and it works, right? Yeah. And however simple or complicated it was, you trained individuals on it. A new person joins the firm, the first few weeks they complain, after that they, okay, I know how to do it. So it's the combination of what is in my base that I have to work through. What is it that, where do I want to go as my, call it maybe first milestone or maybe final destination? And how do I do this in a least impact matter from a user perspective? You can impact internal systems. There's a certain human or financial cost of that you have to bear in mind, but impacting user experience is probably the part that you have to be most concerned and planned about. Right.
Right.
So given that context, if you look at our findings, I'm looking at what we shared is, close to 44.6%, roughly 50%, said that their existing complexity is the biggest challenge, right? So even if there are threats that they face, which we see that there's more of that, even if there are third parties, that's they've had a, in their minds, how do I start this challenge? And that's what we generally, look at our clients and help them out with.
Right. Is there still a case to be, or let me rephrase that question. Is there still some, convincing to enterprises that, Zero Trust is indeed the way? Are IT leaders generally on board with Zero Trust?
If you were asking that question to me let's say 2019, 2018. At that time, call it 4 or 5 years ago, there was still a reasonable percentage of the IT leadership population that was saying, hey, great concept, but I don't quite understand its value to me. I have what I have. Mm. I think during the pandemic, the thinking changed because the environment was forced to change.
Yeah.
That's when they realized, oh, okay, I had heard about this concept. Now I see how it applies to my specific situation. I mean, the obvious driver was suddenly, at least in our US market, throughout the world, people had to work from home. Well, that just taxed so many systems that weren't designed for close to 80, 90% of the user population being away from an office, from a physical premises. Mm-hmm. So at that point, the concepts that Zero Trust had been espousing of one, trust but verify. Or in the beginning, don't apply zero trust first, then build trust as privileges are given based on need. Those concepts quickly found a new audience saying, in the office I could tell who badged in, I have cameras here and there, I could see who's coming in and out. But when people are connecting remotely, I've lost a lot of that contextual information. And my current systems do not give me that information. So therefore, applying zero trust concepts in a technical situation is more needed. So I think the pandemic in 2020, you saw a surge of VPN usage. And actually VPN, pure VPN usage actually came down as there was rapid thinking of, hey, I need to move to more called zero trust enabled systems. So I think the pandemic was triggered. So today, I would say there are far fewer leaders that don't embrace it. I would say practically none. Mm. It's more of how fast are they moving? Have they all started the journey? Thinking wise, I would say, again, I don't have the stats for that. I would say the vast majority have started the thinking. How many have taken the first real step? I would say that's still... there's still more to go on that one. And then the ones that feel like they've reached, two or three milestones ahead, I think there still is it's a good percentage, but still a modest percentage. There's still a lot more to do.
Hmm. So back to that first question about, what is most likely driving organizations' adoption of zero trust? Why is cloud adoption only at 15%? It seems like that should be higher since that is kind of what, everyone moved to, in 2020 because of the pandemic to, support remote and now, hybrid work. I expected that to be maybe, a little bit higher.
Did I hear specifically cloud or just broader, just adoption period? I missed that.
Sorry. Yes. Cloud adoption.
So look, cloud adoption has many dynamics. So one of them is the readiness of your app to migrate itself. So if you have an in-house app that you've built over the course of 5, 10, 15 years, untangling it from its current environment, moving it to cloud, requires work. It's not impossible, it requires work. We help quite a few clients doing that, but it requires work. And you also have the choice of, do I maintain the same exact application or do I re-platform it? Hmm. So the first one is the moving is lift and shift, which has, we have to untangle it and replot. The other one is refactor and re-architect, which is more work probably up front, but the gains might be higher. So those two are called the friction points on moving to cloud. And the second one is for those that have moved already, what we're finding is that at some point, cloud economics may start, if you have small workloads, cloud economics are fantastic, right?
Yeah.
As you start becoming a big footprint in the cloud, you do have to watch your cloud economics because in certain cases with certain workloads, it may be better to have your own data center still. So I think those are the factors that are, I don't want to use the word hold back because no one's holding back anything. It's more of those are the factors that influence move to cloud decisions and stay on cloud decisions.
Right.
So I don't think we're going to be hitting 100%. I mean, maybe, and also look at, for example, certain industries like banking, insurance, certainly government, they, because of their other security concerns, they may not move to cloud at all, or they may be, they move only a small percentage of their workloads to cloud. So that's why I think the percentage is still very healthy. There's likely a lot more growth within it, but I would say that there are probably certain reality that that are coming to play that may be governing the migration.
Right. And then, excuse me, back to the question about you know, the greatest challenges of implementing zero trust. So 44.6%, like you mentioned, you know, they say, you know, complexity and compatibility with legacy systems, which we already discussed. But I think the other three, you know, lack of a clear strategy roadmap, lack of a baseline of the environment, and lack of coordination, of coordinated implementation across disparate teams. Is that, I sort of chalk those up to like just organizations not really knowing where to begin on their zero trust journey. So question for you is, you know, what is a good place to start? Would it just kind of depend on their current infrastructure makeup, or would something like, you know, identity and access management be a good place to start?
So generally speaking, knowing where you are always helps. So we, our suggestion would be to assess your current infrastructure. And sometimes you'll be surprised, sometimes because of merger activity, organic growth over divisions, or sometimes divestitures, not every IT leader has a full picture of what they have. So I think that is a, it's a good investment of time and resources to get a basic landscape of where you are. Now, that also may highlight, hey, you know, I have other maybe security gaps that I need to patch even before I start on a journey. Sometimes also. Now, after that, generally speaking, as you highlighted, if you have not modernized your identity and access systems, that tends to be a good place to start, because zero trust is heavily driven by identity and access. And the more, the better defined those are in terms of user profiles, user groups and role groups. As in, so for example, third parties, contractors, what are they allowed to access, when and how? That, so that definitional work and its implementation on an identity system tends to be a foundational element, because a lot of things built upon that. But if you know who is accessing application A, or you, at least if you know who should access application A, let's say, right, then implementing the zero trust enabled technologies to enforce that is much easier than, hey, let's put controls, but don't decide what to control. So right. Identity profiling, role definitions, application mapping, then implementing that on a modern identity system, that tends to be the first step. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, after that, there's sort of a fork in the road. And depending on the profile of the enterprise, the first fork, which is a more common fork, is to take a look at, call the control systems to use the identity. Let's call it zero trust network access and zero trust access. Okay. Because that is, we've built the identity profiles, let's build the enforcement around that. So the VPN elimination to zero trust based access tends to be a very high value first change. Okay. Mm-hmm. At that moment, you gain better visibility. You can apply things like what's called continuous authorization and reviews. You can apply fine-grained policies. So basically, the bang for the buck on that is relatively high, one of the highest. Okay.
Are you talking about SASE?
So SASE is the technical framework that within which you can do that. So SASE has the private access piece, like internal access, which is a ZTNA. SASE also has the public access, like, for example, internet, like website access controls, looking at CASB, which is how do you control which content is made visible to an individual user. So CASB, if you had one acronym, you'd use CASB. I'm sorry, you'd use SASE as the technology bundle.
Right.
To start the zero trust journey on the, I would call the user access and control side. Okay. Now, similarly, depending on your environment, there's another path you can take, and you can take, obviously you can take both of these at once, which is application segmentation and management of applications and how they work with each other. Because so in a more modern application environment, there's more application to application traffic and interchange of data, which then creates vulnerabilities to if somehow one application is corrupted, malware or internal behavior, what have you, that application can create more damage and risk within the application environment. So the second path, again, could be run in parallel otherwise, is to think of the application zero trust environment. Their SASE is less of a player. I mean, it plays, but there are also specific solutions around network segmentation, application segmentation, so on and so forth, that need to be applied. And that, again, there you look at the, what is my application landscape today? Let's say I did move to cloud. Let's say I did modernize my private environment. Let's say I'm based on microservices, like Kubernetes type microservices. You still need to look at how does one application or one set of containers talk to another set of containers? How do you manage their API access and keys? How do you monitor their traffic and say, hey, has one application gone rogue and starts, you know, poking around the other one? I'm just, you know, using more colloquial language here, right? So that would be the second area to take a look at. That tends to be, priority-wise, the first one, the user side tends to be more often exercised. The other part is still exercised, but that tends to be more organically. If you do it right, you don't have to apply zero trust on top of it. It's right. Built using zero trust principles, if you do it right.
Right. So, which is interesting because in the survey, you guys asked, you know, during the next 12 months, which areas your organization most likely to prioritize for zero trust adoption? And they said, you know, the leading answer was data security enhancements.
Right.
So is that, you know, another place to look at to start, or is that kind of misguided?
I mean, data security is essentially the consequence of identity and access management. If you apply identity and access management, you're able to control data security better, right? So now, because the symptom is data security gaps, the tool needed is the identity access management along with zero trust controls to bring that benefit, right? So that's why those are close to each other. Data security, I mean, as we talked about before in the pandemic, you didn't know who was doing what. And people could be copying, downloading your enterprise, very valuable enterprise data. For all you know, it could be going some other place, right? So that's why data security as the outcome seems to be the first to do, but to get there, you need identity and access management. That's why they're close to each other in terms of the vote. That's my interpretation of that.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. It just seems like people might be kind of missing the mark when they're saying, oh, we got to protect our data. Well, how do you do that? And then
exactly. Yeah. I mean, so part of that is, you know, at the respondents, you know, what they had in mind was data security, but how do you get there? You have to do identity. So, but that, right. they're all within, you know, within the accuracy of the survey, and this was probably plus or minus 3-4 points, right? At least. So they're within the same zone, but the outcome is you have to do both. If you don't start with identity access management, it's harder to do the data.
Exactly. Yeah. based on, not just the survey, but you know, what you've, been hearing from any Deloitte customers, what are organizations missing when it comes to zero trust?
I think what some folks are, I don't want to use the word missing, is what they may not quite understand is zero trust is not a one and done thing, right? It is a journey. Yeah. There are critical parts of the journey that we suggest, and we're hearing from them, from our clients, as this is the must do part now. Right? You know, what do I do now? What do I do next? And what are the things I can do over time as my environment evolves? So the do now part, again, we've sort of, you know, we've talked about that a lot in terms of identity access, but that thinking is what we are hearing, that, you know, this is a journey. A lot of people have understood that it's a journey.
Yeah.
If they have not quite studied zero trust yet, if they understand the concepts, but they might say, I need to do zero trust. That's when you realize they need to build more education on how do you apply zero trust. To your point, it could be where do I start? It could be which technologies do I apply first? How do I choose my technology? How do I decide how to enable that technology within my business? Do I roll up my sleeves and do it myself? Do I have the technical wherewithal and the headcount to go do that? Or do I count on the help of someone else, whether it's a managed service provider or a global system integrator such as ourselves? Those are the decisions. And the reason those questions come up is when you're trying to effect change quickly, you don't have 20 years to make this change. You have maybe called 2 years to make this change, right? Then you want to have the best expertise to help you through this journey on a much more accelerated pace. So those questions come up a lot. Whereas in the past, hey, I'm adding a VPN. Okay, my IT guy or gal can do it. But what's the big deal? Well, these days, given the larger enterprise context and given the multiple parts that need to move, there seems to be a greater tendency to ask for help.
Right. Great. Shalon, I think that answers the questions I had. Unless there's anything else that you think we should know about zero trust.
I think to reemphasize the point, again, it's a journey, it's not a one and done. It is a multi-part journey. So therefore, understanding where you want to start, how you want to go about doing it by considering the end user impact, absolutely important, is a key consideration. And also it's really about understanding your business needs. For example, if you look at the questionnaire was about third party and third party risk. Some enterprises are structured the way they have, if they have three employees, they have seven outside parties, right? They have downstream supply chains, they have retailers, they have resellers, so on and so forth. That complexity has been exacerbated, especially with the pandemic and where you don't know who's what. And in some sense, there was also called gigification of the economy, right? You had more people that are not on your payroll. They may not be on the payroll of even your partner. There could be two, three layers of gigification that you're observing. And that is part of the journey on understanding how your business operates with this new context and applying your current needs, not needs from 5 years ago, in your journey, basically.
Very good. All right, Shalon, thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Zach. Really appreciate your time. And let us know if you have any questions.